Money and markets. The markets are trying very hard not to be spooked about three things. One is rising interest rates. Two is the military budget and the resulting deficits. And three is inflation. We're seeing interest rates rising and inflation peaking its head up and across the board in many different kinds of commodities and budgets. The reality is if interest rates, if the increases are gradual, it shouldn't tank the stock market. If it runs up too much, if we get more than 150 basis points in 1 year, you're going to start to see some real spooking in the equity markets. It's funny, I just talked to one broker today and realized you could get a 13-month CD at 2.1%. And I was like, that's looking attractive enough not to do stocks. Now, you know, to really attract money out of the equity markets, you're going to have to get a higher yield. But I've always said, as soon as you can buy, you know, as soon as you can get 5% on a 10-year municipal, watch the money suck out of the equity markets anyway. But my expectation is that the Fed and the central banks will do a reasonably decent job, along with global demographics, of keeping the interest rate hikes in that 150 basis point per year area. So I see why everyone's spooked, but I think the scenario chance that they lose control of that is still small. Military budgets, that's pounding, but you know, I don't think it's a 2018 problem when the markets really fall apart because of it. Inflation is a real problem. If you look at what the official statistics say inflation are, every indication I see is it's running much higher. So yes, the economy is growing, and in the United States, wage and employment is growing. But if you look at income and wage growth, it's nowhere matching inflation. So the slow burn squeeze continues. U.S. dollar index, U.S. dollar has strengthened a little bit, so it's down 1.39% for the year. It's trading in the 90-91 area. We may get back over 92, and so it may turn out we're not going to break the line. Let's see. The long treasury gotten hammered this year. It's down 6.2% for the year. That gives up most of the gains, not all, that it had last year. The intermediate treasury ETF is now down 3% for the year. That means it's wiped out all the gains it had last year. Bond aggregate down 2.12% and junk down almost 1% for the year. So fixed income off, if anything, it's bouncing a little bit, so I expect it to strengthen. And again, if you get really attractive yields in the relatively short area, like a 2.1% on a 13-month bank FDIC CD, you know, you're talking about starting to attract money back into fixed incomes. But I think it's going to be hard for anybody to go into the longer area because they expect rates to continue to rise. S&P now up 1.79%. We had a bit of a shock in the market today when Trump came out for very drastic steel tariffs against China. It really tanked the market, Dow dropping almost 500 points. It closed down about 420. So down almost 2% today. Home builders now down 8.4% for the year, but all indications are the market, housing price in the strong markets is rising smartly. So I wouldn't surprise me to see the home builders come out this year. VGK, the European ETF, down almost 1%. Germany down almost 2%. Developed markets minus North America flat for the year. China still strong. It's up 2.27%. And the small cap, that's large cap, small caps up 1.76%. Emerging markets up 1.91%. So China leading the way, part of that being a weaker dollar. The commodity index flat for the year. Gold back down. It's up 1% for the year. And silver is now down 3.31%. Oil not as strong as it was. It's up 3.82%. The big question on everybody's mind as they look as the market, and you can tell the market's really volatile and jumpy, is have we gotten our correction? Is the correction over? If you look at the charts, it certainly looks like it's over. I'm a skeptic. I'm very nervous about the market. I think we're still a reasonable chance of a meaningful correction, and so I'm not eager to, especially at these high valuations in the US market, I'm not eager to be to take on more right now. But so we have to see what has happened. We've certainly had a wild ride up and down, and now starting to go back up again. But I clearly think we're in a long-term bull, and I think it's far from over. But my correction for the first half of this year is, are we going to get a correction? We're just going to have to see. No way to know. Putin is heading into the presidential election in Russia on March 18th. We have several elections coming up in March. The first ones in the first week, the Italian elections, which are very interesting. And then Russia on March 18th, no real contest there. Putin is expected to win by a very large majority. But Putin today gave a presidential address to the Federal Assembly, which was interesting for two reasons. That it went through many different areas of life in Russia and the economy, talking about what their goals were and how important it is that they not fall behind. The final section of the speech was on national security, and it's making waves around the world, and is certainly worth studying. You can read the full text. Both I put the full text of the national security section in my notes to this Money and Market. You can also read it at the there's a website on the Russian government, the section for the Office of the President. You can read the full text there. But if you go to Saker's website, he's got an initial assessment, both his own as well as from a naval ex analyst. And essentially, their assessment of Putin's announcements of Russia's new weapons. Ever since the sanctions went on, they've been working very aggressively on developing their weapons. Saker's initial assessment is that there is no longer a U.S. military option against Russia. There is no way the U.S. can engage in a first strike against Russia and come out the winner. And so now the U.S. response is Russia is in violation of the treaties, which I think is unlikely from what I know of them. Another response is that Putin is bluffing. I doubt it. If you look at how Putin has operated on the world stage for many years, and it's not his nature to bluff in this way about these things. And so this was a very aggressive speech. And I would encourage you to take a look at what was in the notes. One of the things he goes into is the extent to which the United States has broken its commitments. Let me read you some of the sections. And again, this is in the notes to this Money and Markets. Now, this is the translated text from Putin's address. Basically, this position, this logic, judging from the realities of that period, is understandable, and we are ourselves to blame. All these years, the entire 15 years since the withdrawal of the United States from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, we've consistently tried to re-engage the American side in serious discussions, in reaching agreements in the sphere of strategic stability. We managed to accomplish some of these goals. In 2010, Russia and the United States signed the New START Treaty, containing measures for the further reduction and limitation of strategic offensive arms. However, in light of the plans to build a global anti-ballistic missile system, which are still being carried out today, all agreements signed within the framework of New START are now gradually being devaluated because while the number of carriers and weapons is being reduced, one of the parties, namely the United States, is permitting constant uncontrolled growth of the number of anti-ballistic missiles, improving their quality and creating new missile launching areas. If we do not do something eventually, this will result in the complete devaluation of Russia's nuclear potential, meaning that all of our missiles could simply be intercepted. Despite our numerous protests and pleas, the American machine has been set into motion. The conveyor belt is moving forward. Their new missile defense systems installed in Alaska and California as a result of NATO's expansion to the east. Two missile defense areas were created in Western Europe. One has already been created in Romania, While the deployment of the system in Poland is now almost complete, their range will keep increasing. New launching areas are to be created in Japan and South Korea. The U.S. Global Missile Defense System also includes 5 cruisers and 30 destroyers, which, as far as we know, have been deployed to regions in close proximity to Russia's borders. I am not exaggerating in the least, and this work proceeds apace. So what have we done apart from protesting and warning? How will Russia respond to this challenge? This is how. And then he proceeds to describe and show videos of all the different weaponry. And again, it depends on, I'm not sufficiently expert to assess the impact of this. But as I said, what Saker and the analysts believe is this is a very aggressive response to creating the defensive capability to protect themselves from what we all believe was the American effort to create a first strike nuclear capacity. So this is a very important development. I would encourage you to read the presentation in the notes. Again, I think the notion that Putin is bluffing is, I find it highly unlikely. While Putin is announcing the upgrades to the Russian arsenals, Xi Jinping is working with the party to essentially remove term limits on his leadership. And what he is essentially doing, if all goes well in the two-week session, is he's going to get a parliamentary rubber stamp on essentially his term changing to one indefinite. And what that means is we're going to have Putin for 6 years and Xi Jinping for an indefinite period of time. That creates very stable leadership in both of these countries, while in the United States, the leadership at the political leadership at the top is very insecure and fluid. Now, why is this important? Russia and China, if you listen to the annual wrap-up, are creating a very powerful financial partnership to basically working in leadership with the BRICS, provides significant and very serious financial liquidity and alternatives relative to the United States and the Western payment systems. So we're looking at a serious competition between the United States and Russia and China. Russia now, if they're correct in their assessment, or Putin is correct in his assessment, that they have tremendously enhanced their defensive position against American hegemony, and then have that capacity in partnership with China, you're talking about extreme pressure on the U.S. leadership and vision, particularly when the brand, the U.S. brand, has never been so low around the world. I will tell you that being in Europe for 2 weeks, it was embarrassing to be an American, as the headlines were full of Robert Mueller's next action. While I was in the Netherlands, he brought the indictment against the Russian social media firm and propaganda activities. One of my favorite quotes came from one of the editorial writers, Holman Jenkins, in the Wall Street Journal. He said, "Let's be realistic. The Russian propaganda activities detailed in Robert Mueller's indictment last week had less impact on the election than 20 seconds of cable TV coverage. Pick a channel of any of Mr. Trump's rallies." It's pretty funny. But you read the indictment, and what you realized is he has essentially nothing. But he's bringing it because then you can say, oh, well, the Russians did it. But he will never have to go to trial because these folks will never be extradited. And so he knows he's never going to have to put forward any evidence. And if you look at the particulars of the people that he brought the indictment against and what they did, he doesn't even have enough of a case. If you look at the indictment, it's not even implying that they had any influence on the election. But creating this indictment, of course, works for the spinmeisters, and the game of the Russians did it, Which looks even worse if you look. We have more information coming out on the Seth Rich murder. I just sent into the website. It'll be up as soon as the site goes up. A new article by Admiral Lyons in the Washington Times on the unanswered questions of the Seth Rich murder. So the United States in all of this looks so ridiculous. Of course, they've also issued new indictments on Paul Manafort for things that started years before the election. So the whole thing, to anybody who knows anything about litigation or enforcement or interfering with the elections, is that the whole thing just looks like a joke. And of course, we, this is a time, if you look at what's going on with Russia and China, for the United States to have a serious brand. But that's not what we're projecting. To make matters worse, someone sent me a memo, an article from the University of Iowa. You just can't make this stuff up. The article was from the Des Moines Register. And let me just read this to you. Essentially, what it says is the Russians are meddling in our food systems because they're promoting the idea that GMOs are bad. I sent it to somebody and they wrote back and said, "Oh, great. Now, if I'm opposed to GMOs, I'm a communist sympathizer." But if you read this issuance from the Board on Agricultural Assembly, and then you read the article from the Des Moines Register, you literally have a group of academics at the University of Iowa taking the position that because the Russians are marketing their food as non-GMO, that they are meddling in our food systems. Now, given what we've done to agriculture, to Russian agriculture, with the sanctions and the meddling that we've been guilty of, and which in fact triggered this whole anti-GMO push by the Russians, you can't make up this level of hubris. It's quite remarkable. The one piece of good news from the Trump administration, apparently they are considering allowing students to file for bankruptcy to clear their student loans. We have now unprecedented levels of student loans which are behind payment or headed into default. This is a very smart election move, and I hope it happens. Certainly, if you look at the president, he's filed for bankruptcy enough. He would not be president of the United States if he hadn't been allowed to extinguish a great deal of debt in bankruptcy. Vice President Pence is proceeding with a private space initiative. They've put together an advisory board of everybody in the national security state who's licking their chops over more government money for space. And now they've come out with an initiative where they're now collecting up and trying to create all the regulatory initiatives or legal initiatives they need to pool and attract lots of capital into space. I'm going to be talking more about that in our first quarter wrap-up, which is going to be on the space-based economy. South Africa, I've been watching what's going on in South Africa now, and just had an associate who was down there for 2 weeks. They wrote me, I wanted to read it to you. They wrote me while the Munich Security Conference was going on last week. I found it interesting that the resignation of Jacob Zuma, the death of the opposition leader of Zimbabwe, and the resignation of the president of Ethiopia all occurred within 24 hours and within the time period of the Munich Security Conference that took place last week. Even though the whole country of South Africa prayed for Zuma's resignation, he gave no indication he would step down anytime soon. And then all of a sudden, even one of the Guptas was arrested that night. It is so unreal this could happen that the Guptas would not have been protected by some kind of deal or agreement. So it looks to me that someone higher up had made the decision, and possibly at the Munich Security Conference. I agree, I think that's very likely. Zuma apparently received lots of money from Russia, promising them to have them build nuclear power plants in exchange for the Russians having a military station here in South Africa. I guess he owes them something if that is not happening now. Anyway, something is definitely going on in South Africa. One of the interviews that I just sent in to post at the in News Trends and Stories when the site goes live is videos about white farmers being slaughtered and the land stolen. There is an enormous crisis underway. You still have a fair amount of very significant white farmers, and they're being systematically killed and their land stolen. Whenever you have lawlessness of that extent, it kills an economy. And so South Africa, if that kind of lawlessness continues to be unleashed, is going to be in real trouble. Now, given the changes to the Zuma leadership, we'll see what happens. If you watch the movie Hotel Rwanda, what you'll understand is that these, violence in an Africa country, the day that the guys at the top decide it should stop, it stops. JP Morgan used to be, and I assume still is, the correspondent banker for South Africa. There's no way this can continue if the bankers want it to stop. So, the question I have is, what's the plan? Why is South Africa being collapsed or allowed to collapse? Is it so somebody can end up controlling that land? The farmland in South Africa is exceptionally valuable, and as there is more and more effort to go into Africa and accumulate farmland, that land is very attractive. So I'm going to be keeping an eye on South Africa because this could turn, I mean, it's very ugly now, it could turn very significantly uglier. And it's proof positive that white people can be genocided. Our hero this week is the Solari team. We have a very tiny but wonderful team. We're outstanding at spiritual warfare. Every member of our team is a great person. A lot of talent, a lot of capability. One of the rules we have is families first. And what's interesting is the people who work for Solari, many of them have major responsibilities taking care of members of their family. And it's remarkable to see intelligent, talented people who are dealing with serious issues in terms of responsibility for kids or parents or people in their family in trouble. So they're dealing with really serious issues. And in the meantime, when you deal with the kind of cyber hacking and warfare and other problems we have, you're dealing with a level of extreme childishness. That's the nature of warring with the Ziyokons. They can be extremely childish and they love to do very childish things to you. And when you have to deal with that childishness and it takes time and money away from doing things that are really important, it takes a remarkable amount of courage and fearlessness to deal with it. Anyway, but they do it because they love helping people and they love helping the subscribers and they enjoy intelligence. They want to live free and inspired lives. They love being part of something that's trying to help other people do the same. But my hat is really off to them because when I said we're not going to bring up the old site, we're just going to bring up the new site. It's like letting go of a trapeze and leaping into the unknown to grab on the theory that you can grab the trapeze, which we will. I know we will. But they're a great team. I'm really proud of them, and it reminds me of my great line from Josie Wales. I rode with them and I got no complaints.